Hey, everybody. Welcome to Drive Through HR. This is going to be a great show. I can feel it. Brian Wimpen, William Tincup, and the lovely Nisha coming to you live every day with the best HR show around. So, William, how the hell are you today?
I'm doing fantastic, man. We got a bunch of CEOs dropping like flies around us. The Groupon CEO sends out a little missive last night. It was actually pretty funny. But that CEO stepped down, well, fired technically. And then the CEO of Saba was announced that he'd be stepping down as well. Not sure why. His is a little bit murkier for me, and it's kind of weird timing because their user conference is next week. And so, you know, one would think that right before a user conference is not the optimal time to announce something like that, but maybe it is. You know, who am I to judge? But I'm just wondering who that, you know, things happen in threes, Brian. So who's the next CEO that we know that will drop like fly? So that's what I'm thinking about.
Dude, that's like a bucket full of stuff. I just wanted to say I'm good. Damn. I don't know what to do with all that. I think we guess who the next CEO is. That's dark, isn't it? It's Dark Friday. Woo! Let's get it started.
Run a poll. Who should
exactly.
get fired?
Actually, absolutely. It's like, oh, was that? There might have been some subconscious bias built into that to guess. Sorry about that. My bad. Maybe we won't do that. We'll save that for Murky Monday. How about that?
Yeah. Hey, another quick note. PSYOP and SHRM created an award. Did you see this?
I did. Anything with, you know, I love me some PSYOP. So
yeah.
I was pretty excited about that.
Smart people care about PSYOP, Brian. So they create a new award together, a new Human Resources Management Award, and it's at HRMImpactAwards.org. You can find out more about that. But this is all about IO psychologists getting together and creating some, I don't know, stuff that maybe the rest of us might be able to figure out at one point. But there's awards now, so it just got real. Check
Dude,
that out. If you
that is actually, that is a, that's kind of a marriage of interesting things there. That'll be fun to, that'll actually be, I was interested, I was excited about it. So it tells you kind of where, how exciting my life is right there, summed up. That email really got me fired up this morning. Woo, world's changing. We got a new award. So driven by IO psychologists. This is good stuff. So well, let's get to our guest because she is just fantastic. So welcome back, Joyce Maroney. Always good to have you on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me back. I try to, you know, behave myself when I appear on your show so that I can keep both your high regard and my day job.
Yeah, that's probably fair. Well, the high regard, you might be overshooting the runway a little bit on that
okay.
one, but the keep your job part, I'm down with that.
Okay.
So, well, if you would, introduce yourself, and then we'll jump into your world after that.
Sure. Well, I'm Joyce Maroney. I work for Kronos. Kronos is a workforce management software company, which for those of you who may not be familiar with the category, that includes things like time and attendance, labor scheduling, absence management, hiring. So think software that helps organizations hire and schedule and pay people correctly. In addition to a series of marketing responsibilities that I have at Kronos, I'm responsible for our Voice of the Customer program, and I'm responsible for the Workforce Institute at Kronos, which is an internal think tank, if you will, that we use to gather insight about what's going on in the world around Kronos. It's relevant to Kronos, and full disclosure, our own William Tincup is a board member of the Workforce Institute at Kronos.
Yeah, and I absolutely enjoy it. It's a bunch of smart people talking about smart things, which, you know, I think it should be one's mission to be the weakest link in a conference room. It should be one's mission to be in a conference room full of some very, very, very smart people and to look around going, wow, I'm going to have to bring my A game Woo! So I absolutely love participating in the Workforce Institute. Let me ask you what's keeping you up at night, because I know, because we talk a lot, that there's all, this could go in a many different directions, but let's start it off with the traditional, Joyce, take us into your world. What is keeping you up at night?
Sure. Well, there's stuff keeping me up at night in my professional and my personal world these days. I'm running for elected office in my town. I'm running for the position of select woman, so that is consuming all of my cycles outside of work. And within work, a lot of what's keeping me up at night is what's keeping the rest of Kronos up at night, and that is accelerating our transition to delivering our software as a service. And as you can imagine, for a 35-year-old company that is optimized around delivering on-premise software, making this transition is a huge journey, the most overused word in the English language perhaps, but a good description of what it takes to reorient around what does it take to deliver a great customer experience in the cloud.
Nice. Well, let's start with politics. What, for those of us that are not familiar with Northeastern elections and whatnot, what is a select woman?
Select woman? So I do live in a very small town. In fact, the smallest town in Massachusetts by land area, 1 square mile, 3,300 souls. And our form of government is called all town meeting form of government. It goes back to colonial times when the United States was founded. And in our form of government, the entire town shows up once a year, or at least a legal quorum of the entire town shows up and votes on the annual budget and any changes to the town bylaws, et cetera. So think of all town meeting as the legislative branch of our government. The executive branch of the government is a board of three, let's call them select people. They are actually called select men. And they hold a 3-year term of office, and their job is essentially to ensure that the wishes of the town, as expressed at town meeting, are carried out over the course of the year. So it's essentially a volunteer position, $1 a year, and the board is in existence throughout the year, meets biweekly throughout the year, and makes sure that the wishes of the town are being carried out.
So nice. I'm sorry, Joyce.
No, I was just going to say, so I have been involved in my town politics, well, not the politics, but in the operations of the town as chairperson of the finance committee for a number of years, and so this would be a step up, if you will, in responsibility, but something I'm very amped to do, and like I said, my first political campaign, but tomorrow we're having a big campaign event and giving out free grilled cheese sandwiches for people who'd like to come and shake my hand and get to know me. So that's keeping me up at night on the personal side.
Oh, I got to dig into this. Are you going to go negative? Are you, because I mean, you know, it's all about winning. Have you already designed strategies, ads, you know, any type of tactics?
Absolutely. Now, I can't publish that through the Workforce Institute because that would be a conflict. But, yes, actually, I have a very punchy campaign logo, and which is basically about vote won the hunt. And my message is about unity and transparency, and even especially for those who are listening who live in small towns or grew up in small towns, you will know that there can be many generations of Hatfield and McCoy kinds of conflicts. And I think that what is needed in our town right now, and probably in every town in America, is more focus on listening and bringing people together and being tough on problems and not hard on people in the interest of solving those problems. So that's my campaign message.
Nice. That's fun. It's obviously you're running, so it's opposed, right?
It is opposed. I am opposing a 15-year incumbent.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh.
Get it. I love that. Let's knock some people off. Mm.
Yeah. At this level, is it a difference between Republican and Democrat? Is it as simple as something like that, or?
It is is not a partisan role. I guess I should say it shouldn't be. You know, I make no secret of my political affiliation, but it should not have a material impact in this particular contest.
Very political, very politically put. I like that.
Well, you know, it is interesting because a big part of campaigning is communications going both ways, and I think that has a lot of applicability in my professional life as well. I mean, we were talking before the call started about the fact that it's Employee Appreciation Day, and, you know, frankly, appreciating your employees comes down to listening to them, accommodating their preferences and their competencies in the kinds of things you ask them to do. And I think that's directly applicable to what I'm trying to do in the town. I mean, people want to be heard. Everybody, it's not possible in the world to always get your way every time. But at least if you are listened to and shown respect in terms of your point of view, it's going to be a lot easier to implement changes or to implement, you know, the kinds of things that you want to get done. So I like to think that in a 35-year working life so far, you know, I have learned to be good at listening and learned to be good at accommodating, you know, competing points of interest when I'm trying to do something that I think is the right thing to do.
Nice. Two last questions. When's the election, and do you have to give speeches?
The election is April 27th. I will actually be making a speech tomorrow at the Knights of Columbus, 4 to 7. And I will be, that will also be where we are giving out the free grilled cheese sandwiches. And for anyone listening on the phone, if you're from Boston, you may be familiar with Roxy's Grilled Cheese. If you watch the Food Network, there was the first season of the food truck competition. Roxy's came in, I think, second or third on the Great Food Truck Race. And actually, my reason for choosing Roxy's is one of the founders is the son of good friends of mine and a kid I've known since he was a little child. So I'm supporting his business and giving out grilled cheese at the same time.
Nice. Well, Joyce, for your speech tomorrow, all great speeches, American speeches in particular, have three elements. From the Gettysburg Address to Martin Luther King, every great speech that has happened in America has three things in common. And that is, one, respect for the past, two, pragmatism for the present, and three, optimism for the future. Every great speech in America can be boiled down to three simple elements. So as you prepare for your speech at the KFC Hall, which, by the way, big fan of the Knights of Columbus, there you go. Now you have three elements. Let's talk about the cloud. Like Microsoft, to the cloud. All right, so tell us a little bit about the cloud. What are the challenges? You're turning a big, giant, huge battleship, cruise ship, and you're pointing it in a different direction in some ways. What have y'all seen as some of the challenges for the audience, for your customers? What are the challenges that y'all have faced and overcome, et cetera, in terms of moving towards the cloud?
Sure. Well, I think the first thing is, you know, as I said before, our company, you know, was founded on a model that assumes that, you know, we are going to sell the customer a product and we're going to help them in servicing that product, but principally the responsibility for the deployment and support of that product will tend to reside with the customers. And, you know, that's a model, obviously, that tons of software companies have executed over the years. It's still principally what ERPs like Oracle and SAP do, but even they are rushing towards the cloud at this point. So, you know, as a vendor, you have literally at Kronos generations, decades of experience in creating processes and training people to, you know, manage our customer relationships in a particular way, founded on this set of assumptions that the customers are taking the principal responsibility for the successful management of the software and the hardware, because, of course, you know, we're selling time clocks as well. With the cloud, you have to reorient your company from this product perspective to an always-on service perspective, because even if you aren't actually speaking to the customer, you are always present in their environment, and you've got to keep those servers up and running. You have to keep those software patches applied. You have to make sure that you know, security and privacy and all of those compliance issues that are so important today, that you're taking care of that on the client's behalf. So that what that means for the company is taking an enormous step up in terms of the responsibility that we are expressly taking for that customer's success. So as you can imagine, that requires differences in how we look at support, how we look at customer communications, and really just how we look at our responsibility for the successful operation of our technology in the customer environment. And, you know, a lot of our, we've done a few things. I mean, we have actually, we bought a SaaS company last year, that SaaS HR, which we now call Workforce Ready, which brought us 6,000 plus new customers. Now, that company sold and serviced that software principally through a large partner community, and we still, you know, for those customers, we are still very much collaborating and supporting that partner community, and now we have a growing population of those customers that Kronos is responsible for. And then we have hundreds of Workforce Central customers for whom we are doing hosting and managed services. So not strictly a SaaS model, but full square, a cloud model through which we are managing those customers. So it's a lot of change for Kronos, and you know, I think we have stepped up in a very big way in terms of just the sheer volumes of people working on this, optimizing our technology to be deployed in the cloud. So it's a lot of investment in both people and technology enhancements to optimize for the cloud.
Perfect. Joyce, let me do a quick reset. Our time is flying by. Everybody listening to Drive Through HR, Brian, William, and Nisha, talking with Joyce Moroney. So, Joyce, speaking of politics, I want to get kind of your take on Yahoo. What's going on over there?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I have to say, I have very conflicting feelings on this one. You know, I, as a really long-time feminist, you know, I hate to take shots at a sister. I do question the way that this change was communicated. Have to say, I mean, I'm working from home today. I give my team a tremendous amount of flexibility when it comes to working from home. I do believe that there are certain, so putting aside work where you clearly have to be in your workplace, like I don't think you want a cardiac surgeon trying to do his or her job from home, but, you know, for many of us who are in these sort of knowledge worker, laptop carrying types of jobs, a great deal of our work can be done from home. I think there are certain things that are done better face-to-face, and, you know, if you're trying to, you know, rally troops together in a personal way, getting people, you know, into a group setting and working on projects together, I think can be really great for driving innovation. But I don't think it's an all-or-nothing strategy, and I think like any other management tool, you have to kind of mix and match depending on what the situation resolves. Now, that being said, Marissa Myers, a brilliant person who was obviously very successful at Google and is, you know, CEO number three within a one-year period at Yahoo, they brought her in to effect a dramatic turnaround, and I have to assume that she gave this an awful lot of thought before she decided to implement this this strategy. So I think, you know, time will tell whether or not this turns out to have been a good decision. But, you know, when I look at this from the outside in, you know, I have to ask, boy, you know, the people that, you know, might be in that top 10 or 20% that they're trying to hold on to, you know, you wonder how quickly do they have to find reasons to, you know, bend the rules for certain people that they want to retain who may have designed their lives around an expectation of working from home. I would think competing in Silicon Valley for talent, this is a tough obstacle to overcome if this is not something that's going to be, you know, offered in the future. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to indict her for this decision because I don't think it would have been a decision that was made easily. But I think it's going to have its downsides for Yahoo. There's no doubt about it.
So just, you know, kind of brainstorming here to help her out, because I'm sure she listens to Drive-Thru HR, is, so what do you, VP, you know, you're sitting in a room, you're with the, you know, the head of talent acquisition. This just came out, you know, obviously a brilliant CEO sitting there. What are you telling him the next step is now that's out to the world on this new policy to retain the folks and actually try and recruit folks in? How do you help them do that?
Yeah, I mean, Yahoo's not a startup, but, you know, this one thing that this all made me reflect on was, you know, I was on the senior leadership team of Brass Ring at the time that Brass Ring was a startup. And, you know, we had a few dozen employees, and, you know, we had a lot of long, hard days. I mean, it wasn't unusual in the early days to, and we did work, principally, we worked together in an office, and but we had a bi-coastal headquarters, frankly. We had a headquarters in Northern California. We had a headquarters in the Boston area. And, you know, we could be at work until 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. And I think if what she's trying to do is kind of recreate that sense of we're all in this together, we have to work really hard to turn this company around, then you know, maybe there were other ways to do that. But if I had to guess, I would guess that that's part of what she's trying to do is create a sense of urgency that this is a company that's fighting for its existence and that radical change is going to be required in order to be successful on that mission. Might she have looked at this more on a kind of case-by-case or group-by-group basis and said, all right, you know, that, or looked and said, okay, are there certain people who are abusing this privilege? Perhaps those options had already been exhausted, but I do wonder, you know, I'm going to guess that Yahoo has resources all over the world, and so I just wonder, you know, aren't you still using telework, if you will, to coordinate with resources in other world geographies? I'm guessing, like most technology companies, I bet they have development and maintenance going on in India and places like that. It kind of, some of the logic to me breaks down because I have to assume that they are relying on telework in certain parts of their business. So,
Joyce, if this...
Go ahead.
Joyce, if this works, so let's just say that this actually gets pulled off and Yahoo turns around amongst a bunch of other things and Yahoo turns around. Do you feel like some of the backlash is rooted in the fear that this takes hold, that other companies then do something like this?
Yeah, I think that work from home is a new enough phenomenon that the people who benefit from it, I'm sure this is sending out ripples of anxiety, perhaps not as much as if perhaps a company that was on a firmer footing, like, say, IBM, suddenly made that declaration. But sure, it's mobile technology that's made telecommuting possible. So it's really, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, if I think back to when I started working at Lotus in the early 90s, I went to Lotus in 1992, and I think it was probably right around that time that the possibility of taking a laptop home and doing your work on a laptop, you know, even became possible. And so, you know, let's say it's a phenomenon that's only about 20 years old to begin with, but I think you've got a whole generation of workers who've come to expect that flexibility, and you know, frankly, a lot of the work that gets done, you know, on an at-home basis isn't getting done any differently or with any less productivity than would happen in the office. And, you know, long-term, is frankly, as a nation and probably as a world, we've got bigger issues like fossil fuels and that kind of thing that, you know, there may come a time when there will be no choice but to restrict some amount of driving. So, I don't know. I don't really think this benefit is fundamentally at risk. I certainly think the world will watch, and I really doubt that this particular change would be the pivot point on which Yahoo succeeds or fails.
Well, and that's we got about 3.5 minutes left. So tell us, I would love to ask this question because it's all over the board on the answers. So what's currently something that is really inspiring you, that's driving inspiration for you, Joyce?
Something that's driving inspiration for me, I would say what we can do to transform customer experience. I have been involved in one way, shape, or form directly with the customers of the companies I've worked for you know, the better part of 30 years. And you know, in my day job, I am responsible for the voice of the customer at Kronos. But you know, more deeply, I struggle sometimes to balance how much technology enables a lower touch experience with the fundamental notion I have that really people prefer a personal touch. So, yeah, I've been doing, I spoke at a conference on customer experience a few weeks ago in Miami Beach and, you know, met a lot of people who, you know, do work like I do around customer experience. And so I've been really giving that a lot of thought lately, like what can we do to give people a personal experience while at the same time, you know, managing to the finite financial resources that we have to do that. So, and you know, I think about this political campaign I'm running. Of course, one of the first things I did was build a website, and I'm someone who's active in social media, so I have a Facebook page. But, you know, in the world at large, it's still not necessarily the majority of people who are you know, managing their lives in that virtual world, and that's probably a good thing. So just kind of, again, balancing this notion of the virtual world lets us do a lot of things and reach a lot of people in a hurry, but that isn't necessarily the primary way that a lot of people want to be connected with.
Well, fantastic, Joyce. It is always a pleasure to hear from you. I love the grilled cheese strategy, especially you're driving local economy, so you are giving back. That's
right.
The bottom line right there. A little culture, you're respecting the past, you're whatever the number two was, and then you're looking toward the future.
Yep.
on your stump or the speech. So good stuff. Good luck with that. I'm sure you will do fantastic. Where can people connect with you? And then we're going to roll it out. We're done.
Sure. Workforceinstitute.org.
There you go. We're, you hit it on a search engine. She is omnipresent on the web. So,
yeah.
Well, perfect. Joyce, thanks. Williams, thanks. Nisha, thanks. Folks, we're out of here. Listeners, thanks. See you tomorrow.